Welcome to the Keystone Sports Network.
Hello and welcome to the obligatory Keystone crossover show. I'm Jim Galante along with my good buddy Chris Buchanani. And this is a combination of the obligatory PSU podcast and the Keystone Sports Network. So this is where we take a couple of different aspects of the Penn State football world that we may not have gotten to in our respective podcasts, and we take care of them here. Before we get to those type things, though, Chris, is this not a great week to podcast after a big 28-20 win over Auburn?
Amazing. Amazing. I'm still floating, Jim. I talked about it on our show, and I'm just going to keep repeating it. Happy Valley needed that weekend like we have not needed much in my time here, which has been quite a while now. I think, frankly, COVID-19 pandemic impacted this area more significantly than the Sandusky scandal did, both financially and psychologically. And so to have everything wrapped around that tremendous win over an SEC opponent under the lights on national television with College Game Day here in the whiteout in rare form, man, it was a shot in the arm, if I can extend the metaphor, that we desperately needed.
I see what you did there. Anyway, I just think it's so fortunate for us to be part of – it's one of the great events, not just in college football, but I'd say in all of sports with this whiteout. Would you agree?
Well, having never attended a European soccer match, I don't know if I want to risk the wrath of that fan base. They're pretty intense. I hear they put the SEC fans to shame, and I've heard all about how great and wonderful the SEC fans are over the last week. But yeah, it's hard not to imagine. It doesn't rank up there with anything else you're going to find on this planet or any other, frankly.
All right, let's get to things on the field. I know you want to talk about tight ends, Chris. This was a bit of a coming out party for the tight ends in this game. After a total of only three catches in the first two games, this group of tight ends, they had six catches against Auburn. They had a touchdown catch, and they even had a rushing touchdown when Tyler Warren acted as the Wildcat quarterback. That's a pretty big night for that tight end room.
Yeah, so we had heard so much coming in about the tight end group. James Franklin had actually come out and said he felt it was the most talented tight end room he's been around since he's been coaching football, which is quite a claim because James has coached a lot of places and coached a lot of talented players. And I know you and I both had Coach Caduti from fortheblogy.com on our respective shows to talk about Mike Yurcich's offense at some point. And I remember when we had Nick on, he talked about how we could expect, especially with the tight ends, we had seen some pretty promising things from last season as they were forced into action after the Pat Freiermuth injury. We'd get to see them all over the field, used in a lot of different creative ways. He would put more than one tight end on the field at once. I don't think even Nick expected him to use three tight ends in the same formation, and apparently neither did Auburn, but he was very creative with all of that. But the counterbalance to that was if you go back and you look at his body of work at his other FBS stops, the tight end has not been a position that he's featured prominently. I went back and I looked at it a little bit, going back to his Oklahoma State days, where to start out in 2015, he had Blake Jarwin, who's a very good NFL tight end. And in the 15 season, Jarwin only had 17 catches for 200 yards, and there were only two other rostered tight ends who recorded a reception, and only six total. So only 23 catches by a tight end over the course of the entire 2015 season at Oklahoma State. The following year, Jarwin comes back, one of only two tight ends to see action, and he totals 19 receptions for 309 yards. And then you look at Ohio State, maybe a little bit of a different comparison because he was technically the quarterback's coach. They're not the offensive coordinator. Four different tight ends recorded stats for the Buckeyes in 2019. None had more than 14 catches, and the most yardage for the season was 142. And then last year at Texas, you had a pair of tight ends with 15 and 9 receptions, respectively. and both had around 160 yards receiving on the year. So in one game against Auburn, Brenton Strange's 71 yards are, you know, nearly half of the highest season total for a tight end playing for Mike Yurcich at any of his other FBS stops. So what I take away from that, and I think we're seeing it play out from week to week, is this is not a guy who comes in intent on hammering a square peg into a round hole. He's somebody who loves schematic, creative, imaginative offensive football. He looks at the talent on the roster and then figures out how to utilize it. And I remember Nick saying, kind of contrasting how he had used the tight end previously, is that he would get to Penn State, recognize the type of players he has at the tight end spot, long, fast, great catch radius, real mismatch nightmares, and find ways to move them around the field and create advantages for the Penn State offense. And we have been waiting for that through the first 2 weeks of the season, waiting to see those guys take the step they looked like they were poised to take after last year. And man, they picked absolutely the most opportune time to do it.
And the fact that there's three of them there, what impressed me, Chris, was having all three of them in the game at the same time. What you have at tight end different than, say, a wide receiver is, especially with three of them there, which one is acting like essentially a lead blocker or even a tackle, and which one is going out to catch a pass like a wide receiver?
Yep.
And it's not just one guy on the field like that. There's three of them.
And any one of those guys is going to be a favorable matchup with most linebackers you're going to see on Penn State's schedule. Although credit to that SEC front seven, man, I was very impressed with Auburn. Both physically and mentally, they hung in that game about as well as you could ask.
Yes, I've been saying I think that Auburn team, they're going to beat someone really good this year. I'm not sure who it's going to be, whether it's Texas A&M or Georgia, but you get the feeling that's a good enough team to beat an elite team. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about in the use of the tight ends, they didn't catch it on television when it was happening because, again, it was part of this hurry-up offense. But the play in the last drive where Strange was just going down the field, nobody near him, he was literally lined up at tackle, and Caden Wallace was out somewhere. And all I could think about is that poor cornerback who's looking up in front of him saying, who is this number 79 out here?
And probably in the back of his head thinking, the grand irony of this is if I hit this guy wrong, I'm still going to get thrown out of the game with a targeting penalty.
At that point, I think he's more concerned about being steamrolled, you know, than anything else. And that was a form – we talk about being creative with the tight ends. How do you get more creative than that?
Yeah, it's awesome, and it's exciting to think about what Jahan Dotson said after the game, which is there's still plenty more of that playbook to be opened up over the course of the season. You can understand why James was so intent on moving heaven and earth to get this guy to Happy Valley. The other thing I do want to mention about the tight ends, and I have been harping on this about Brenton Strange and Theo Johnson since last season, I am just so impressed and encouraged with what kind of blockers those guys are. You know, especially for young kids, sometimes that is not something they do willingly or well. And I felt even last season they were way ahead of the curve in terms of their ability and willingness to block. And so we'll see how Warren grades out there, but that's a huge, huge advantage. And look, if we're being entirely charitable and fair, maybe not areas you would identify as like tremendous strengths for Mike Gesicki or even Pat Freiermuth, although I would put Pat probably a little bit more above Mike because Mike really is, I mean, he's not really an inline tight end, despite what Adam Gase seemed to think when he got to Miami.
Well, he's a receiver. That's right. What he does. And the key word, I think, in your description of them as blockers was the word willing. That's what I always used last year to describe Strange and Theo Johnson. They were willing blockers. Obviously, they have the physical skills to do it. But with that said, what I'm impressed with is they seem to use Tyler Warren as a lead blocker more often than the other two. You see him coming across the backfield, leading a running back through a hole. It seems like of the three, he may even end up being the best as far as blockers go. Now, my question to you, Chris, is you've seen three games now. What's the future? What's the rest of the season going to look like for these tight ends?
Well, I expect that what we saw on Saturday night is going to be a much more accurate representation of what we can expect going forward than in the first two games. But again, like what I find to be so promising, what we're seeing from Penn State's offense is not only that quarterback and play caller seem to be on the same page, they both seem to be hitting all the right notes in terms of figuring out where the weak points are in the defense, what the opposing game plan is going to give them, and then just taking it. So if the chance to exploit mismatches with the tight ends is there, I feel like Sean Clifford is comfortable enough in the offense that he's going to make the right reads. And Mike Yurcich is dialed in enough that he'll be setting him up to succeed there. And if it's not, there's plenty of other weapons all over the field. And you know, with this offense, you know, half a dozen or more different ways to skin the cat. So I do expect to see the tight ends to be more consistently involved. But I think you're going to have some games where, you know, as teams get hip to what we're doing, they're going to dial in on taking them away, and then we'll just look for something else.
And I think that Mike Yurcich just looks at all of these players as weapons. I believe he looks at it, I've got three wide receivers that are really good weapons. I've got three tight ends that are weapons. I've got three or four running backs that are weapons.
Yep.
And whoever the defense wants to take away, fine. So be it. I've got somebody else. You can't take away all of them. I'll exploit who you don't take out of the game.
I love that. I love that lack of stubbornness, that he's not a guy who comes in and says, well, I don't really use tight ends. You know, no, I use motion and formation and route combinations and the skill sets of the players on my roster to create mismatches and take advantage of the opposing defense. I mean, Joe Moorhead used to talk about that all the time. And clearly those two guys are cut from the same cloth. And I think we can expect similar results from both, right, at Penn State.
I think so. I'll just put it this way. With a lot of the stuff we learned from Coach Caduti about Yurcich, I came into the season really liking Mike Yurcich. I've now changed my mind. I used to like him. I now love him, okay? That's my change. One last note I wanted to bring up with you because I think it was really important, and I know it gets talked about, but I'm not sure people realize just how important this night was for recruiting for Penn State. How about it, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you start with the fact that after last year's recruiting class, which I'm not as down on as a lot of other people were, but I know it was not, you know, in terms of national ranking and star ratings, what folks have come to expect from James Franklin, there was some concern about the lack of in-state success. And so to start off your night with a commitment from the number one cornerback in Pennsylvania to just adding to the recent resurgence that Penn State has been having in the whole dominate the state bit. That's great. And yeah, look, I understand for a lot of recruits, winning and losing on the field at the game they attend isn't the deal breaker. Justin King committed to Penn State after we laid an egg against Northwestern at home. Sean Lee committed to Penn State after he watched us lose 6-4 to Iowa in one of the most ludicrous football games ever played, although I guess he figured that's a defense I want to be a part of. But it doesn't hurt, man. It doesn't hurt for them to hear the victory bell ringing and have a jubilant crowd sticking around to belt out the alma mater at the end of an amazing night. So, yeah, tremendous, tremendous advantage for a great recruiter like James Franklin to get those kids on campus and get them in the stadium for a whiteout.
And it's not, and obviously the environment, you always hear recruits after they commit talk about the environment. I believe also winning against a good Southeast Conference opponent. And the last element to this, and this is again, I think the Mike Yurcich factor, if you're an offensive player, don't you just watch that game and say, I want to play on that team?
For sure. for sure. That's I know that was, I think, one of the issues around the 2018 class. There were some concerns with people who wanted to come to Penn State and play for Joe Moorhead. And then there is a question about what kind of an offensive play caller Ricky Ronay was going to be, because he had not been an OC before. Having a guy with a proven track record who is also getting it done for your school, that helps a lot. I do believe that. Everybody says don't, you know, choose the school, not the coach. That doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. Hey, Chris, that is it for our show. Thank you so much. Some fantastic information from you. But that's it for the obligatory Keystone Crossover Show. Be sure to join me and Chris again next week.
Keystone Sports Network.